Welcome to Money Moves. I'm Jill Schlesinger, certified financial planner. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Tolercio, also a certified financial planner.
Hello, Jill.
Hello, Mark. You're wearing your CFP polo
shirt.
Get
used to it. As long as this show is around, you will see nothing else other than a CFP shirt.
I feel like I should get one. So what is a certified financial planner? It's just that you took a bunch of coursework about financial planning, and that's, you know, everything from investments and saving and estate planning and retirement, and you took a hard test.
Spent a lot of money.
I used to be a certified financial planner, meaning I owned a company that dispensed financial advice and managed money. Mark, oddly enough, just chose to do this.
Yes.
For everyone who's listening, Mark is wearing his blue CFP polo shirt. He is a very handsome Italian-American man with a slightly receding hairline.
Receding? I don't think so.
A little bit. No. Oh, stop.
Hair's good. It might not be as black as it once was.
It is a little. I do see it's a little bit gray. If you want to go onto the website and see, if you're just dying to see what Mark looks like, go to jillonmoney.com and go to the About section, and I made Mark put his own bio in there. Also, while you're on the website, don't forget you can submit any financial question that you have about anything going on in your life. Just go to the Contact Us button, write us a little note, check the box that you want to join us via video or audio, and we'd love to have you come join us. So, Mark, as we speak, it's been some time now, some weeks since the SpaceX IPO, which seemed to just absolutely either terrify or excite the world.
Coming soon to a retirement account near you.
And now coming soon to a retirement account near you. So the IPO happens, the stock jumps, it goes back. It's just like very typical what happens when IPOs launch. Get that? I did the rocket, the launch thing. But I think the more important aspect is that many people will now have access because the NASDAQ, which is the big trading electronic trading platform, made a concession to allow SpaceX to be included in its index funds way sooner than they ever have in the past. I think it used to be a year that they would wait. Is that right?
And that's still the case for, like, you know, the S&P 500.
So SpaceX will not be in the S&P 500. However, if you own a NASDAQ index, whether it's a tech index, whether it's the composite index, whether it's the NASDAQ 100, SpaceX is going to be included in that index. And that means any fund that you might see or ETF in your accounts that would replicate one of the NASDAQ indices now will be forced to buy SpaceX. So in other words, people are going to own SpaceX. Is that good or bad, Mark?
I'm completely indifferent. It really doesn't, you know, it's not something to freak out about. It's one stock within a big index fund. So I wouldn't go nuts about it. I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. If it's something that really bothers you and you want absolutely nothing to do with SpaceX, then you're going to have to get a bit more informed as to what's going on inside your retirement account. You're going to have to log in. You're going to have to look at the list of index funds and see if you have any exposure. And if you do and you really don't, then you're going to have to make some changes.
Okay. So if you don't want SpaceX because, like, your Tesla gave you so many problems and you hate Elon Musk, or you just feel like anxious about this brand new company that has gone public and loses money and, like, you don't get it, you can, especially in a retirement account, you can sell a fund that is based on a NASDAQ index and replace it with an S&P, a Standard & Poor's index. And the only thing that you need to worry about is that if SpaceX continues to vault ahead and things go really well, that you don't kick yourself for not owning it.
You can't second guess yourself.
No second guessing. So no second guessing in investing anyway. Mark, some people may have taken a flyer and bought SpaceX in the IPO. Mm. And they said, up, it's down. Keep it or not keep it?
It depends on how much of a, you know, percentage of their overall portfolio it represents. If it's completely out of whack, then I would take some off the table. If it's still within their, you know, their risk tolerance allocation, then, you know, it's fine. I'm fine either way.
So when we say risk tolerance allocation, meaning that, like, if you want to have some portion of your investments that are risky, that you're just going to be like, I'm going to put this much in crypto or this much in SpaceX or this much in a meme stock or this much in, you know, some crazy idea I have, we tend to think of that as keep that maybe at 5 or 10% or less of your total invested assets. So sometimes people will say to me, well, you know, if I put my home in here, this is what my net worth is. Don't do that.
No, no, no.
It's of your investments. So if you've got, you know, $100,000 in your Roth IRA account, tell the folks what is 5 to 10% of that, Mark. Do that math.
What do you want to have, like 10,000 or less? I wouldn't go above that. So if it's out of whack, then yeah, reallocate.
Producer Isaac wants to know, was this, now that we saw that SpaceX went way up but then came back down a bit, was it overhyped or not? Was it made to be too much? Was it too much of a thing?
I mean, I think based on what has happened, I would say yes.
But maybe not, because maybe it was just, the reason it was overhyped is just the sheer valuation that this company received, that this was the biggest IPO. Mm-hmm. I think it was overhyped in that sense that any huge deal gets overhyped. Or when crypto was at 120,000, it was overhyped. But as things continue and as new things come to the market, time will tell whether or not it was overhyped. I just think it got so much of attention.
Well, that's it. I mean, everything's overhyped in the beginning. That's all you heard about was SpaceX. I mean, you couldn't avoid it.
Well, let's see. Let's see what happens. By the way, a whole bunch of SpaceX employees are now going to be able to sell it. Yeah. So when all of those people start selling their positions, it's going to be interesting to see who's buying it
Cha-ching.
Up. Yeah. So we'll see. Time will tell. SpaceX launched. Let's see if it continues into orbit. Well, we are very excited to welcome in a jillionaire, Cassandra, live from Italia. Hello. Ciao, Cassandra.
Ciao, Jill.
So we read about your story in the New York Post, and the headline was wild. It basically says, American family calls it quits on overpriced NYC, buys home in Italy for $13,000. Can you please tell us a little bit about, fill in some of the blanks on this story for us?
Yeah, the story is a lot to pack into one headline, but it's not a scam. That's really what the total came out to be when we purchased the house.
For $13,000, you can buy a quarter of a parking spot in New York City. What does $13,000 get you in your small town in Abruzzo?
It can get you quite a lot, actually. So walls that aren't crumbling, which means just a stable foundation. In our case, we have a roof that's in good condition, so mm-hmm. we didn't need to replace the roof. Most of the work that we had to do was just cosmetic, which was great because we were planning on doing it ourselves. So plumbing, replumbing the entire house is really the biggest factor in terms of price that we had to pay for, biggest expense for the house renovation. And in Italy, when you do something like plumbing or electric work, it needs to be done by a certified professional. So that's really why it costs more, because you have to, you know, outsource the work. But other than that, I mean, if you're a little handy, a lot of people can handle it themselves, I think.
And what about, like, how big a place is this? I mean, square footage wise, or how many bedrooms do you have?
Yeah, it's for the typical American, I would say, like, this is a small house, right? We're very used to large houses, especially in the suburbs. But for New Yorkers, I think they'd be quite accepting of it. We have two bedrooms and two bathrooms, and we have a basement and also an attic space.
So who has citizenship? Does somebody have citizenship? You, your husband?
Fantastic question. So I have citizenship with another EU country.
Okay.
We have zero ties, though. My husband and I, we have zero ties to Italy.
Right.
Wait a minute. So you were living in New York City. Tell us a little bit about what was going on for you. What prompted you to even start looking down this route?
We were making a decent amount of money, I will say, for our situation and our age. So I was working in tech. I was making close to 100K. And then my husband was working at Whole Foods at the time. I would say combined, you know, we were making somewhere between 150, 170, which is great. We were kind of in our mid-20s, late-20s at that point. So it was a great starting point. We are the type of people that don't like to spend a lot if we don't have to. So when we first landed in New York, we were renting for almost $3,000 a month in Park Slope. What prompted us to start thinking about how or where we could live potentially outside of the US was when we took a trip to Spain And we were just walking through Sevilla, which is a city in Spain, and there was this huge piazza, and there was a very distinct moment for me. I remember thinking, like, there's nothing like this in the U.S. that I can think of. Even in New York, you have some gathering places like, you know, Washington Square Park, but there's nothing quite like a piazza. That was really the turning point for me, is when the first time I started thinking to myself that maybe we could have a life outside of the U.S.
Ever feel like you need one app for sales, another for inventory, another for accounting, and the list never ends? Managing a business shouldn't feel like a full-time job just to keep your software in check. That's why Odoo exists. Odoo is the only business software you'll ever need. It's an all-in-one, fully integrated platform that handles everything: CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR, and more. No more app overload. No more juggling logins. Everything works together seamlessly so your team can focus on what really matters: growing your business and serving your customers. Beyond simplifying your workflow, Odoo also saves you money. Instead of paying for multiple expensive platforms, you get one system for a fraction of the cost. And whether you're just starting out or managing a large company, Odoo scales with you. It's easy to use and fully customizable. It streamlines every process, giving you more time and freedom to focus on the parts of your business that matter most. Thousands of businesses have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
Where are you from originally, both of you?
We were both born in Seattle.
Okay, so you already made one massive move across the country. So, I mean, first of all, Mark, I think that that's already like, okay, that takes some guts, right? You leave the Pacific Northwest where there are a lot of jobs and you probably have families. Now you're in New York. I get the idea that I already like sensed, because just from reading a little bit about you, that I knew they were savers. I just totally knew that. I could get it, like, oh yeah, I want to save it. I mean, because by the way, the average rent in Manhattan, I think, is like $4,000 a month or so. Maybe it's five. So amazing that you were doing that. But the fact that, like, part of this is financial, but what you're describing to me is something, Mark, you've always wanted to do, which is that feeling of, like, you know, the La bel far niente, which is, you know, like the art of doing nothing, as they say, right? Like, it's the way of, like, living your life that's different than what we have in the United States.
I mean, to me, this, it seems like it's less about not being able to make it in New York and more about, you know, fulfilling this adventure of a lifetime opportunity. Because you guys had money. Like, you moved to Italy, you bought this place. I know it's not outrageous money, but you bought this place, you renovated it. And then you ended up buying another place. You renovated that. So you guys had money. You could have gone to a lower cost of living part of America and definitely been able to have bought a house. But I think this is more about the adventure.
Is that right, Cassandra? Do you think that that was it? Like that feeling in your heart that was that you had felt in a piazza in Spain, that that's really what you were seeking, less so than the, hey, we got bought a house for $13,000.
I think it's a combination of both. My husband and I are both at the age where during the 2008, you know, we were younger, and we kind of both saw our parents stress with that. Mm. And from my side, at least, there was constant talk in my household about how, you know, it's great not to have a mortgage if you can afford it. And I think at that time, you know, my parents are just complaining to complain, but that really stuck with me. And as an adult, I kept thinking of, how is this possible? Can I own a home? Can I have my adult life without having this huge mortgage over, you know, my head? And yeah, to your point, we could have gone to somewhere that was much more affordable in the US, but I don't know if just hopping across the pond to me was much more appealing, because you have access to all these different countries, not just Italy, but travel in general is just much more appealing and exciting. And yeah, so it was definitely a combination of both affordability and adventure.
Did you think that you were going to settle in New York, though? Like, I mean, as a West Coast person, you came to this, to New York, you're both working. For those folks who are listening and watching, I think it's really wild when you hear numbers like what Cassandra just said to us. Like, you know, we're making $150,000 to $170,000. And that is not a lot of money in these high cost of living areas, right, Mark? So what happens is, I think people hear that and they're like, you were rich. And you're like, well, not exactly. It's expensive to live in New York. And I guess the other piece of it was, did you think you wanted to settle in New York?
Yeah, I think at the time, I mean, that amount of money to me seemed like enough. We were able to make it work and have a great time living in New York. We weren't, you know, constantly pinching pennies. I think that the idea of having a lovely brownstone somewhere in Brooklyn always did appeal to me. But again, when you look at the actual numbers, it's like, am I really going to save, you know, X amount for a down payment? And then during that time, also, Seattle was just catching up to New York in terms of real estate pricing. So going back to Seattle to me was like, that's going to be the same thing as staying in New York. The only benefit I have of Seattle is that my family is there. I think overall, just the concept of settling anywhere in the US to me at the time, or anywhere that, I don't know how to phrase this, anywhere that I'd be interested in settling in the US, I think was just kind of came out to be the same in terms of pricing.
So,
Good job not pissing off half of America.
Exactly,
though.
Right? Nicely done. We usually do that, so thank you for that. Yeah. So what's the negative? Give us the reality check now.
Yeah, so for us, because we were on a budget, we didn't settle in a big city. So we're not in Rome. We're not in Florence. We are in a small mountain town in a region that not many have even heard of. Not even a lot of Italians have traveled to Abruzzo, which is where we are. And that to the wrong person is a downside. You are removed from kind of this romanticized vision of Italy that many people probably have when they travel to Italy. But living here, especially in a small town that's, you know, in the countryside, is a very different reality. And you have different hurdles that you have to jump over almost, you know, every day for a few years until you get a sense of just some kind of concrete ground under your feet, like to understand what you are doing yourself. So basically recreating a life in a foreign place, that's not for everyone.
So if you're now, you went over there, you were able to retain your job, right? You were able to work remotely.
I did keep my job that I worked for in New York while living in New York on remotely for a few years after we moved over to Europe. However, it's been a few years now, 2 or 3 years since I've left and started to kind of do my own thing.
So when you got there, did your husband work or not?
No, my husband did not work because he was a butcher at Whole Foods, which is hard to do remotely. So as much as we'd like to get to that point, when we made the decision to leave New York, obviously, again, I'm a saver, I'm a budgeter, I'm a spreadsheet person. I thought about the reality of this. We're going to be a one-income household. The upside is, you know, we're not going to be paying rent for a while. We spent the first couple years of our time in Europe just traveling and, you know, camping, Airbnb, stuff like that. So we weren't paying rent, we weren't paying a mortgage. And on a one-income household, we were able to make it work. During that time, that is when we were actually able to save probably the most amount of money to purchase the houses, the properties, in Italy now.
So, Cassandra, would you say this is a little bit of a twist on the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early? You're not saying retire early, but that you locked down. You literally decided since, as you said, you're a saver, you ran the numbers. And when you ran the numbers, it was very clear to you, with certain guardrails, you could make this work. But you could only make this work if you didn't let your lifestyle drift. You had to live and die by those numbers. Is that right?
Yeah. In the beginning, it was very important, especially when we were, before we actually had our daughter. She was born at the end of 2020. So when I was the only one working, we had to, stick to a budget because at that time, I also had to think about what if I just lose this job at any given point? You know, what are we going to do? Are we going to move back to New York so both of us can start working again? I think that kind of fear disappeared once we actually bought the first house in cash. And after that, you know, if I did lose my job or something, at least we have somewhere to live and the rest we can figure out. But to your point, yes, a lot of this, and this is still a journey, continuing journey, is a lifestyle shift. And it's just a change on perspective. It's, you know, things cost less, but we might also be making a lot less than when we were both working in New York at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's fine. We still have a happy life. We're adjusting. But yeah, it's a shift.
I want to ask about the people's reaction to you guys landing in their small town. Did you have a little bit of the cold shoulder? Were like, who are these Americans? Or was it open? How were you received?
We were received very graciously. And I will say probably 60% of the reason why is because we came with a baby.
Oh.
Italians love children. So if there's any hack you take away from this, you know, if you want to move somewhere new, especially somewhere like Italy, just bring your baby.
Rent a child. And I'm wondering, since this we are talking about your personal finances, what's the vibe of like financial money management among your neighbors? Like, do they talk about this? I know we're sort of obsessive about it, but what's the mood there?
So this matches my personality perfectly. Where I live in a small town, Italians do not like spending money. If you can figure out how to obtain something or like the least amount you can spend on something, you will be seen as like the hero. So it's kind of the opposite flex. I feel like as a lot of Americans, they like to show off how much they spent on something. It is the complete opposite in Italy.
And is there any concern about, are people saving for retirement? Are they talking about these things? I know you and your generation that like, you know, you're hyper-focused. Are they talking about anything like that?
No.
They are not talking about this. Yeah, Mark already knows.
No. I like that. What do you want people to really know about your story?
I think it is about how I've grown up. I grew up in the suburbs, so I have that kind of aspect or outlook of life, you know, from my past. And then I moved to New York and I have this big city energy and that experience there. Now I'm like really in the middle of nowhere in a small town in Italy, which, you know, 90% of the time is absolutely beautiful. And as you said, can be romanticized. I think what I want people to know is that given these past like different aspects of my life, I've been able to identify like what I want, not exactly what the paths that people have told me to take or what are recommended. I really had to look, you know, just stop everything and take a look at our life, my relationship with my husband, just kind of the people we are, our personalities, what our priorities are, and make the decision that's best for us, not necessarily just what everyone else is doing, what all my friends are doing back in Seattle. That might just not be what I want or what I was made to do or how to live my life.
I love that so much. I feel like this is exactly the mantra of this program and everything that we've ever done, Mark, which is to tell people there's no pre-written formula for your life. Nope. You can look at your, you know, this much times your salary or do this, do that, but I think that what you're articulating, Cassandra, is really this beautiful way of saying, I know who I am. I know what makes me happy. It doesn't mean that it makes your parents happy, your friends happy. What are you going to do there? And how are you going to live? And that's my mother speaking, not me.
And mine.
And, you know, but I think there is something so instructive about being 30 years old, about saying I was on a certain path. I could have stayed on that path. But maybe that wasn't the path that was really bringing me happiness. And it doesn't mean you have to move to Italy to do that. For some people, it's like, I went to law school, I'm doing big law, and I'm miserable. I am so grateful that you joined us because the story is so much more interesting than the write-up in the New York Post. Like, I hope you write a book. Did you sell your book proposal yet or not?
No, but you got me thinking, I guess.
Yeah, dude, come on. I'm so happy for you. I wonder, I hope it's going to last. I know you've bought another property there, and are you renting it out as an Airbnb? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, exactly. We didn't really know what to expect from it, but we just tried it, and it's going well, so we're
okay.
Very happy.
So next stream of income, you're going to do the book proposal. And then, Mark, what about selling the rights for a streaming show, which is about her life?
Is this like the Italian version of Emily in Paris?
Yeah. Oh, yes. It's Cassandra in Abruzzo. That's exactly what it is. Will you get busy on that so we can watch your ascent continue?
Yes, I'll write it down right after this.
Excellent. Thank you again. It is time for the TikTok takedown. If you have a social media video that is intriguing to you or you just keep running across and it's proffering some sort of financial advice or some tips, send it to us. Let's look at this one. It starts with something that's not, you know, terribly awful, except that I find it terribly awful. It says, stop taking family vacations. And so let's watch this, Mark, because already I hate the idea of not taking a family vacation.
Stop taking family vacations. Instead, do this. Set up your LLC and put your family members as your board of advisors. Just like big companies can have board of directors, we LLC owners can have board of advisors. And when you have your board of advisors, the IRS allows you to have quarterly board of advisor meetings anywhere in the world, and these meetings are tax deductible. So if you want to take your family to Disneyland as one of your board of advisor meetings, take your family somewhere for Thanksgiving as one of your board of advisor meetings, you can have the same experiences with your family and make the flight tax deductible, the Airbnb tax deductible, and 50% of the meals you get catered to that location is tax deductible too. Now, if you want to do this strategy, you want to document your board of advisors, you want to take pictures and meeting minutes to make sure you document and have everything legitimate, but stop taking family vacations. Instead, do this.
I don't know what to say. I just want to take a vacation, man. This made my head hurt.
I mean, okay.
Good God.
So let's just talk a minute about this because I don't want to belabor this. A limited liability company, an LLC, is a form of a business. You know, people who start businesses, they can be a sole proprietor. It can be a limited liability company. It can be an S corporation. Any of those three forms, the money you earn in your business or your side hustle flows through and goes into your personal tax return. And there are also expenses associated with an LLC. I have an LLC.
So do I.
And so, but what's a legitimate expense? Like, oh, I need to buy new microphones for me and Mark, or, you know, Mark and I have to invest in something, or we have to pay for our CFP, or
right.
Okay. So those are legitimate business expenses. Now, a limited liability company is not meant to be some shell sham thing so you can take a family trip. So all of a sudden when he's talking, I'm like, wait, so you actually have to lie to the IRS that these are your board of advisors, right? And then you have to also have, like, where's the income coming in? Like, what are you could, like, you could take a family vacation, but what is the purpose of an LLC? One thing the IRS is really good at catching, Mark, is when you have a hobby that is supposedly a business. And to me, this is sort of in that category, which is you start an LLC for what purpose? This guy has a, I don't know, he somehow has a business of giving social media advice.
Well, his handle, I see CPA. So yeah, this guy must be, maybe he's an accountant. I don't know.
Maybe. But I guess the other question is, if you're an accountant and you have a CPA designation, you are telling your clients to set up a sham LLC so you can take family vacations?
What could possibly go wrong?
This is a big thumbs down, guys. Keep sending them. Okay, gang, that is the program. We are so grateful that you join us each time. It is amazing. We love this. We love doing this. Follow and listen wherever you find your podcasts. Please send this show to every single person you know. Otherwise, we're going to get canceled, and that would suck. Talk to you next time.
Wall Street
movie
doesn't even accurately portray the level of insanity that occurred.
A new Paramount Plus documentary.
This is a company built on fraud.
If it feels too good to be true, it probably is.
The outrageous story of Jordan Belfort.
People lost money. People got hurt.
Even Hollywood couldn't tell.
For a lot of people, the American dream turned into the American nightmare.
The real Wolf of Wall Street, now streaming on Paramount Plus.